Okay, we're going live. Hey, welcome to the Growing the Fishes podcast. Episode 161. This week we have Roger from True Aquaponics. How's it going?
I am doing excellent, and I'm so happy to be here. Last minute call, but still happy to be here. How's everybody doing?
Doing great.
Fantastic, man. I was so glad to hear that you were coming on the show because we got the message we needed a last-minute guest, and then we got the message you were going to be our last-minute guest. And I called my buddies and said, yeah, we got one of our friends coming on tonight. It's going to be great doing aquaponics again.
Yeah, I'm always so darn busy. I get asked, you know, quite often to do podcasts. I never really get a chance. I love to. They're always so much fun and get to meet so many new people. So this is just an awesome opportunity once again. So let's take a little bit more from Steve because I know he's got a few introductions to make.
Yeah. We also have Roger, the other Roger.
Roger just sent a message to everyone that he just lost audio, so.
Did he lose his ability to speak, or just he can't hear us?
We also have Fish Ganja Guy.
Hey.
Haven't seen you in a minute. How's it going?
You still can't see me. Everything's going well. Just busy and had a night off, so I thought I'd make it over.
Awesome. Well, we're glad to have you. I think we have the other Roger now. Big two. Roger?
Well, he's here in spirit, so.
All right, yes, Roger's here in spirit. We also have Mr. Green Jeans.
Hey, everybody. Glad to be here.
All right. Roger, from True Aquaponics, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do and a little bit about the online Facebook group you run. It's been quite a while since we've had you on.
I lost internet connection temporarily. It shows it unstable. Can you guys hear me?
Yep, we can hear
you. Okay. All right, so let me back it up just a little bit because I'm sure with all the new people, nobody really knows where I come from or what's going on as far as me. Years ago, back in 2012, 2013 actually, I was diagnosed with a rare blood disease. And while laying in a hospital bed, I decided, hey, I better start eating more healthy because I'm a foodie. I like to eat everything. So I started researching a little bit on my laptop that they let me have. My companies let me have at the time. And they're like, hey, just play with this. And when you come back, you can go back to work. So I'm looking for healthy ways to grow stuff, thinking, you know, hydroponics is the way to go. And it wasn't too long before I saw this little bitty thing down in the corner that said aquaponics. And like anyone, I'm like, what the hell is that? So I clicked on it. And I was reading about aquaponics, and in walks my doctor, or one of my doctors at the time, and he's like, hey, I do aquaponics. I got this big tilapia thing, yada, yada, yada. So I actually started investing time in it, learning about it, and within about 3 weeks, I started building my first system, which is still running today, believe it or not. We still use that same exact system, which is very flawed in design, but has given us a lot of food and much, much joy. We've built systems after, quite a few of them, and they do much better as far as the design goes, but you can't beat aquaponics for the actual growth and viability of the systems. But one of the first things we found out was we were lacking stuff. We were growing plants that at first did really well, and then all of a sudden started having these what turned out to be deficiencies showing up and test issues. So I started again researching, trying to figure out what was wrong with my plants, and found that I had first some iron deficiency and then a potassium deficiency and several others. And we started reaching out and buying the minerals we needed to put that into the system water to make our plants right. And what we learned in doing that was not only were we making our plants grow better and look better, but they were also giving us produce that was better for us to eat. So it was more healthy overall, which is the goal of anyone doing aquaponics, hydroponics, or growing in their own dirt garden. You must have healthy plants. Otherwise, you're not going to get what you're supposed to have. So if you're going to do that, you may as well buy from, or if you're not going to do that, you may as well buy from Walmart and get your China meals or whatever you want to call them. We got so involved in buying the minerals that we thought we needed that we bought too much. And in the very beginning realized, you know, we get all this stuff. What do we do with it? So we started selling it in small amounts to people we knew on Facebook and locally just to help them out. And it grew so rapidly that it became a business. And that's where we're at today is with this budding business where we not only get to sell minerals at a decent price to help people, but also we're seeing new opportunities to grow. And Steve here is one of those guys we're growing with. So we're looking forward to a new partnership with him, starting hopefully within the next month and a half, maybe 2 months. Depends on how quick I can kick him and get him moving. But we're going to start offering a water test to people to where you can send in a sample. It's going to be tested. It's going to show us exactly where your system's at. And then we're going to send you a packet that has everything in it you need to rebalance your system, get it where it needs to be so that your plants grow as quickly and as healthily as possible so that you get the best from your plants as you possibly can. And with that, I'm gonna check out for just a second and let Steve kick in because I know he's got some stuff to add.
Actually, real quick, I have a question I'd like to toss in there on what you're saying. When people send in their water sample, are you going to be doing like a little questionnaire as far as like the size of their system and things like that? So that way the packet you send matches up appropriately to dose for that tank size?
Absolutely. It's going to be more than just, you know, how much water is in your system. We got to know how much water is in your system total, not just your fish tank, but your entire system. So if you got a 300-gallon fish tank, but you've got 6,000 gallons worth of rapids, which is abnormally odd-sized, but just for the sake of saying it, we take all that water into account. We also want to know what you're growing. So if all you're growing is lettuce, your requirements are going to be completely different than if you're growing nothing but tomatoes, if that makes sense. Does that answer that question?
Yeah, perfectly. So big difference between if they're growing tomatoes or Jamaican tomatoes. Good to know.
What the hell is a Jamaican tomato? I've never even heard of one.
So we'll be launching with nutrients and then eventually also including some pest management solutions into that as well. Later down the line, which we're really excited about as well. But basically, we're going to be, you know, take away the science, take away the thinking, and take away the complexity for aquaponic growers. You know, it's the number one reason why people fail is because they don't understand the science or the chemistry. So we're going to handle that for you. So all you'll have to do is sign up, you know, send out your water on time when you're supposed to, and we'll get the analysis, and then we'll use that analysis to send you custom formulated pre-dosed nutrients along with the dosing schedule that will handle that until your next testing comes in, and you'll have different tiers depending on the size and frequency that you want it tested, and again we'll really simplify everything for everyone and help people allow their both commercial and home aquaponic systems to really excel in a way that they haven't had that custom opportunity to have that kind of personal care on their system, you know, especially for commercial operations that don't have someone that understands it. This can really solve a lot of problems, which is, to be honest with you, a large percentage of the commercial farms out there. And Rogers also has a whole wide range of different nutrients. You want to talk about that as well that you have available?
Absolutely. I'll go back kind of to the beginning of what we noticed in our own system at the very beginning was that we were having an iron deficiency and then finally a potassium deficiency within a couple of weeks. Because of that, we did come up with a wide range of minerals that we made available in both small and large quantities, which is hard to find. Most people or most supply houses, they want you to buy large quantities, and you got to spend a lot of money. And if you're working with a small aquaponic system or even a small dirt garden, buying, you know, several hundred pounds worth of one mineral is really cost prohibitive and makes it to where it's not worth dealing with. So you end up going with commercial grade fertilizers, which end up giving you exactly what you get from Walmart or wherever. So what we do is we buy all this stuff in bulk, and then we break it down and make it easy and accessible to everyone. And it's your irons, different potassiums like potassium sulfate, potassium silicate, seaweed extract, which is really big in the market. We do it in larger amounts and much cheaper than anybody else does. And then we go into the calciums, whether it be for a high pH system or a low pH system. There's different ways to apply that calcium, whether it be in your system water or spray it on your plants. There's a whole multitude of minerals out there that need to be applied in different ways. That way you get the best plant growth and the best plant produce that you're intaking for you and your family to make sure you can be as healthy as possible. And that's really the most important thing is to make sure you're getting the best produce possible from your garden. Otherwise, it's really not worth doing. And that goes from whether it be fruits and vegetables, trees that are giving you fruits, or even, in this case, cannabis for a lot of the guys here and ladies here. You want the best possible produce you can get. Otherwise, it's just not worth doing. I know Steve's got to have something to add to that.
Absolutely, and I've been working with Roger for a long time and helping him with you know, different questions and you know, putting him in the right direction on a couple of things when he's had, you know, different problems with a couple of weird customers that have done some pretty particularly crazy things. So you're in a large Facebook group as well. You want to tell people about that and some of your experiences. What are some of the common problems that you're seeing people have with our aquaponics gardens? Maybe what are some of the common solutions maybe as well?
The most common problem we see has nothing to do with minerals. It has nothing to do with the plants they're growing. It has to do with their siphon system that they use for their system. And usually it's a bell siphon issue, and it's a misconception for them. They just don't understand how it works. And there's not real good information out there about what to do with a bell siphon. They may buy a kit or they may watch a video online about how to do it, and they do it and it doesn't work. And then they freak out and say, this isn't working, and they go completely away from aquaponics. If you're having bell siphon issues, please reach out. Let us help you. It's a real simple fix for most of them. Now, let's move beyond that. The next thing we see that is actually, I should have brought this up first, is your media. The grow media you use, or medium, if you're doing a flood drain bed, please do not go out there and buy a bunch of pea gravel. It's not going to work. At first, it'll seem like it works great, but then after a few months, it starts to clog up with fish poo. And it's so small and so tightly compacted that even if you add worms, you're just not going to be able to clean it out. So water's not going to flow well. And when that happens, your system will go anaerobic and start producing a lot more nitrite and kill everything, basically. So your system will crash and you'll have issues that you can't correct without absolutely replacing the media. So that's one of our biggest issues we see. We get calls from all over the country and messages from all over the world, people asking, hey, what's wrong with my system? And we ask them questions like, you know, what are you using for media? And they come back with pea gravel or something else similar that's very small. And it's just wreaking havoc on what they're trying to do. Beyond that, something that's not pH neutral, which pea gravel in many cases is, but it's so small it doesn't work. But if you have something that has limestone in it, it's going to run your pH up, and it's going to crash your system at some point. And even if it doesn't crash your system, it's going to lock out every nutrient you can possibly imagine. Excuse me. Let's see. The next most common thing is system size. A lot of people, and I understand this, everybody understands it, you want to start out as cheap as possible to see if it actually works for you. So people will start out with a 10-gallon bucket with you know, a couple of fish in it and find out that it just doesn't work. Their temperatures vary really bad. You know, it goes from 68 in the morning to 95 in the afternoon. It just cooks everything, cooks their fish, cooks their plants. And so you've got to look at system size. Now, if you're in a controlled air situation in an apartment or something, you can get away with it. You just got to watch your pH carefully.
Absolutely. You had a question about alkalinity, or we were talking about alkalinity before the show. Do you want to mention that?
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm no fool. I know I don't know everything, so I am going to ask people questions when I get the opportunity. And I did ask about alkalinity hardness, and if you could explain more of that to me and the other people watching. I think it's a very important point, because when we talk about alkalinity hardness, it's totally different than pH. It has, from what you were describing to me. And up to this point today, I always felt that alkalinity hardness had something to do with pH, and it really doesn't.
Yeah, well, it does and it doesn't. So alkalinity, so you have pH, which is potential of hydrogen, which is on a scale from 14 to 0, which is the acidity or alkalinity of the water, or which is how acidic or alkaline, I'm sorry, is the better way to put it. The water is 7 being neutral, which would be rainwater. The other one is alkalinity. Now, alkalinity is also called dissolved carbonate hardness. And alkalinity, depending on how high your alkalinity is, will have a effect on what your pH is and what the stability of your pH is. For example, you want to have a dissolved carbonate hardness test kit. You can get them as cheap as $7 or $8 for the Aquarium Pharmaceuticals one, all the way up to, I think it's like $20 if you want to go for one of the fancier saltwater ones. Those also work for freshwater just fine. And they're, you know, $20-$25 for the Salford. That's the one I was trying to think of. So your alkalinity, you went generally above 40 parts per million or higher. Higher is better. Or above 2 dKH. Now, the problem is if you go below that threshold, that you will actually cut your microbial replication in half, because there's not enough available carbon in the water for those microbes, which is something that's often misrepresented by other aquaponic experts. There's plenty of different videos out there saying you want, you know, real low alkalinity so that you have more pH control. That is true for hydroponics. We are doing aquaponics where we have microbes that we need to replicate and breed. They need that alkalinity to do those things, and that's negative to have them be, you know, below those levels. You actually have a slower replication rate. Now, what's going to happen in an aquaponic system if I slow the microbial replication rate? It's going to cut the ability for my microbes to process nutrients down significantly. So you want to always maintain above a 40 ppm DKH or you know, ideally higher than that, above 60 ppms, or above 2 dKH in that 2 to 4 dKH range, in order to maintain proper microbial replication and proper pH stability. Now, if say, for example, you stripped out all your alkalinity, you're going to have massive pH swings from daytime to nighttime, and that can cause issues with both your plant and your fish. If anyone has any questions, you know, feel free to let me know. But
I'd like you to, can you put a link for one of those $20, the nice saltwater meters that you were talking about?
It's just from Salford. You can get them at any aquarium store.
Okay.
Someone had a comment saying awesome aquaponic systems need higher pH. Generally, you want it around 6.6 to 6.8. You know, that's going to be your sweet spot for cannabis. 6.4 to 6.8 would be your ideal range, with 6.6 being the optimal. I don't know why we have it on. Trying to make sure everything's running well with the new system. So what are some of the other common issues you see with aquaponics? What are some of the common vegetables you're seeing a lot of the backyard and home people growing? Or some of the other things that you're seeing common with the aquaponic vegetable people?
All right, so just back up just a hair on that. The most common thing we see grown is lettuce. And I always ask people, and this is on a commercial level, they grow lettuce. And I ask them, why are you growing just lettuce? Because no farmer ever made it big on just lettuce, right? They grow several different crops. And they always say because it grows the fastest. Okay. I understand that you want the quickest profit that you can possibly get. The problem is it's always a low profit. So if you're going to the commercial or if you're growing for yourself, try to grow something that you would go out and buy instead of just lettuce. Are you just going to buy lettuce? No. You're going to buy a variety of things. So that's what a lot of people we've worked with, we've tried to push them to, is don't just grow this crop or that crop, especially in your home system. You want to grow tomatoes, you want to grow the chilies, the peppers, you know, you want to grow the lettuce, of course, because it has its place also. Brussels sprouts, kale, you name it, grow everything. In aquaponics, there is nothing so far, and I'm sure it's out there, but so far there's nothing I've seen that you can't grow, all the way up to cactus, as long as your system is working properly. It will grow, and it will grow very well. The most common thing I see our customers that are buying from us grow are fruiting plants such as tomatoes, cucumbers, zucchini, squash. And the biggest problem I see coming to us, other than a mineral or nutrient deficiency, is lack of pollination. And that's something you don't hear a whole lot of people touch on. Is lack of pollination, which doesn't help my business much to talk about, but it needs to be talked about because you need that help. If you don't get pollination, your fruits are just not going to grow. So one of the biggest issues we see looks like blossom and rot, and it's not. It's actually lack of pollination on these fruits, whether it be squash, tomato, or whatever. So the fruits appear to start growing, and then they rot off the vine or off the bush, and they seem to shrivel. Blossom and rot's a little different. It starts on the blossom end, which this other does as well, but it usually just takes up that end, whereas lack of pollination takes the whole fruit. So that's something to watch out for, and again, that doesn't really help my business, but I'm not going to lie to you. It's just not the way we do business. The next thing, let's see, again, the most common things are potassium, iron, calcium for the fruiting plants, and then phosphate. A lot of people don't realize what phosphate does for the plants. You can end up with really spindly plants and plants that have a red hue or purple hue to them. But what happens when you don't have enough phosphorus in the water is seed production drops much lower. So not only do you have less seeds, but they're also much smaller. So if you're trying to get a seed crop to where you can grow the next year or 2 years or 5 years down the road, your seeds are going to be of such quality that you can't do that, or you're going to have plants that are just not what you want. So phosphorus is a real important thing to look at. Beyond that, pH is a real big issue for most people, including us. Our water comes out at a pH of 7.8, so we pre-treat our water before we put it in our system to get it down to about 7. And then as we top up our system, we're actually adding a small amount of that water. So if our system was at 7.8, which it's not, it's actually a little below 7, we're adding a pH of 7 to top up our water daily, which is just, you know, 20, 30, 40 gallons for our size system. And it doesn't swing the pH. So it's really important to not swing your pH. So make sure you're not doing that. And do it, when you're adding water, do it in a way that you can't swing your pH. Next.
I was going to say, you also do a lot of work with silica. I know I introduced you to potassium silicate back in the day, and you want to talk about that? Because I know you definitely have a lot of people that have a lot of benefits to that, and you even taught me some stuff with that actually as well.
Yeah, potassium silicate is one of our it is our best selling product, and here's the problem with having me on the show is I'm not here to try to sell stuff. I love to sell stuff. I love to make money, but it's not my, it's just not my nature. Potassium silicate, on the other hand, is something you taught me about it, like you said. And we just went through a really hard winter, and I had some issues this last year where I wasn't able to enclose our greenhouse. And I knew up front that potassium silicate, you know, the silica that was in it would, help us in issue or situations where we had really high heat. It would help the plants, get through that and maintain, and if they did get damaged, they would heal quicker. What I didn't know until this last winter was that they actually went through it without freezing. Not all of them, but we had a large amount of our aquaponic system that did not freeze plant-wise, even when we got down into the mid-20s. For us here in Texas, that's a hard freeze. I know for a lot of you folks up north, that's not a hard freeze, and you're laughing at me right now, but down here, that's a hard freeze. We got water puddles with ice on top of them. If you can make a drink and cool it down with something out of your water puddle, that's a hard freeze. So we saw that, and there's no scientific information to back this up, but we saw that by using potassium silicate, our plants actually survive through those freezes. Now, would it survive to 10 degrees? I don't know. We didn't hit that. We hit the mid-20s, 25, 26. But as far as the heat goes, potassium silicate for sure is the bomb, because we have tomatoes that have continued producing even though we've been over 95 for almost a month. We're still getting blooms. We're still setting fruit. And then also when we have issues such as plant damage, they repair themselves much quicker. They heal much quicker. And that's an important thing that a lot of people don't realize about silica, is that it's a very highly healing mineral, that plants need. On the other hand, the potassium in it is also greatly needed. That's one of those things. If you ever see your plants during the heat of the day wilting down, and then when it cools off, they come right back up. That's lack of potassium, guaranteed. There's no way around it. Another way to look for that, if your plants are showing a yellowing of their leaves, not the veins, but the leaves themselves on the lower part of the plant, the older growth, that's also potassium deficiency in most cases in aquaponics. There's other things that can do that, but in aquaponics, nine times out of ten is potassium deficiency.
So that's a great thing you brought up. So what are some of the other common problems you see with people doing fruiting crops? You have a lot of experience with people doing those specifically. You really help people, excel in growing those crops with some of the stuff that you have. What are some of the other problems that you're seeing with those crops in particular? You talked a little bit about the pollination, a little bit about the potassium, but what are some of the other issues you're seeing with those? I know powdery mildew is another big one.
Yeah, so powdery mildew, there's a couple of solutions to that, none of which I'm very good at. Typically, when we get hit with powdery mildew, if we don't knock it out immediately, we lose that plant. But if you're quick on it, and it's because my work schedule doesn't allow me to do what I need to do, but if you're quick, if you're watching and you catch it quickly, there's several things you can do. They have a sulfur burner that you can put in your greenhouse, which will actually prevent it. Don't ask me questions about that because I have very little.
That's control. Old school. That's real old school there. Yeah.
Do not use that with cannabis. Do not use that with cannabis.
Okay, well, that's good information.
No, do not use that with cannabis. Perfectly fine for vegetables. Continue.
Okay, well, that teaches me something. I didn't know that, so that's good information. Another thing we've used over the years, the last 3 years actually, is Kapow. If you get powdery mildew, if you catch it quick, you can knock it out with Kapow, which is Pure Nutrients, I think is the name of the company. We used to carry it. We had issues with shipping, so we quit carrying it. The other thing you can do is, baking soda. You can mix that with water and spray that on there. It changes the pH of the surface of the leaves and kills it.
The other good solution is labs. If you have lactobacillus bacteria, or even if you do a quick brew, I have a couple different versions of quick brews on my YouTube channel. That's another one that's a great probiotic that you can spray on there. And then Bacillus subtilis is the other good one. Bacillus subtilis, the downside to that one, it also sold as a product called Serenade, or chicken probiotic for chicks, prevent pasty butt. It's also the same product. The downside is that it smells like a high school boys' locker room. It smells like feet and BO. It smells pretty bad, but it works really well.
A lot of old hydroponic greenhouse farmers use diluted milk, which leads you to the labs in a way, but not the same thing. You want to address that too, Steve?
What's that, Roger?
Diluted milk. You know, a lot of old farmers take diluted milk and spray it on powder.
Yeah, even diluted milk, but the problem is it has to be unpasteurized milk.
Right.
Again, just reusing the lactobacillus, but if you're taking that and making labs or something like that, or kefir, or... shit, even kombucha or kimchi even. For foliar purposes, you could, in theory, use kimchi, although the sodium level in kimchi kind of makes it not really viable for what we're doing. But
you can find, like, unsweetened kombucha. That would be a good option. Actually, there's been studies posted to PFA where they've studied its effect on PM specifically. So if you look up in the Probiotic Farmers Alliance, I think it was a girl named Luna, something like that, has done a pretty extensive research on, I'm pretty sure it's homemade kombucha, but if you can find like an unsweetened, like a raw, non-flavored kombucha, it's very effective on PM as well. The other thing that I've used before is... an orange peel extract, and then I spray on and then rinse with water after about 5 minutes. So similar to what you would do for spider mites, so you can have an essential oil spray, but garlic and orange oil are two different oils that I find effective on PM.
Awesome. Sweet. So what are some of the other, any other common issues you're seeing with, you know, especially for as long as you've been running a community there, Roger?
As far as common, it seems like that there's so many people in our group that are growing aquaponics, everything seems common these days, just because we see it all the time. And one of the things we've come up with, and again, we're fixing to launch a new service with you to where it's really going to help with this, but we've used what we call a three-week nutrient dose. We use it in our own system, and it knocks out most of the deficiencies you're going to see and helps your plants. And it's got potassium and iron chelate and magnesium in it, but still we're lacking. We know we are. As good as that is, as good as that mix is, we're still lacking. Now, there's no calcium. Let me take that back. We do have a three-week dose we offer, although it's only offered in bulk to just a few clients that ask for it that has calcium in it. But for the most part, there's no calcium, so you're missing out on that. There's also no phosphate. There's no seaweed extract that is so very important as far as we're concerned. We use it in our system once a month. We add seaweed extract because there's so many trace elements in there you're not getting elsewhere. As far as issues, gosh, every day we get a new email that talks about issues people are having, whether it be mineral or some other issue. And I think Steve had something to add in there.
I was going to say, what about crazy or funny or noteworthy ones? Because I know I definitely, we all get the weird ones. So what are some of the more entertaining or comical ones? And, you know, leave them anonymous to a certain degree, but maybe bring up the scenario or situation.
Oh, wow. Okay. The crazy ones. I'll throw this out there. I'll put this on me because it is true. This actually happened, and this isn't a deficiency. This is a fish issue, and if you're raising fish and you're wanting to eat those fish, it's very important to know this, especially with catfish, and I assume other fish would like it as well. Well, they'd like it at first. If you grow tomatoes and you also raise fish, and you ever cut those tomatoes down for whatever reason, trimming them or whatever, because we've had some massive tomato plants, and you let the leaves fall in the water, the fish are going to eat them. If they eat very many, they're going to die. And I know this for a fact because I killed almost 100 channel cat fish that were right at 2 pounds each in a matter of days by letting them feed on tomato leaves. So that's the craziest thing I've ever seen, and it was me that did it. So there that is. I hate to put that out there again, but it's true, and other people are avoid doing that. Go ahead.
Great teaching moment, man. Great teaching moment. That's the bottom line right there. That's what I love about you, man.
The one exception to that, I've seen tilapia be pretty well immune to tomatoes. At least in the showroom at the aquaponics source, they would munch on those tomatoes pretty much every day of the week, and they never seem to die. But I can't, you know, I definitely could see nightshade poisoning from the leaves being an issue. It definitely sounds pretty reasonable. We had a question from chat saying, "What food does he suggest feeding fish? Protein percentage for the best results, fruiting crops, or does he use or suggest?"
Okay, if you're asking me, I'll tell you real quick. We use the regular food from Tractor Supply, game fish food. No, it's not organic, and you're not going to get an organic fish growing in aquaponics. It's just not going to happen, nor are you going to get organic plants. Not what they consider organic, and that's part of the government's play on spending money and padding certain people's pockets.
Yeah, there is no USDA certification for fish in the United States.
Yeah, exactly. So worrying about fish food to a certain extent I mean, don't overthink it. Get a decent fish food. Don't go out there and buy trash dog food like Old Roy and feed that to your fish. That's not what I'm saying. Get a fish food that is for fish. Typically, they are formulated for fish growth and to keep the fish healthy. And we've had really healthy fish, except for when we feed them a lot of tomato leaves. So we've eaten our fish. They taste good. They are healthy. They don't just die on their own. We have to actually do something to kill them. So get a decent food that's not, you know, don't get it from the dollar store or anything. Go to Tractor Supply or some other, like Atwoods or something, Granger. Get your fish food there. Don't go out there on the internet and find somebody that says it's organic, because it's not going to matter. When it's all said and done, if you're adding any mineral for the most part to your system, it's no longer organic. So, and Steve said that there's no USDA regulation for fish being organic or whatever.
That's partially true. You can add minerals in an organically certified system, but you have to explain why you're doing it, and that's a whole thing, and that's definitely where you're getting into some serious consulting territory. I'm one of the handful of people that has actually written SOPs for nutrients that have been signed off on a large scale. And by large scale, I mean over a 20,000 square foot facility. So if you do have a question, you know, you can email me at puttingponics@gmail.com. I'll plug myself there on that one. But generally for organics, you know, that gets into a whole separate thing. You can only get organically certified currently in the United States with aquaponics. Canada wants to pull the GAP certification on March 30th of next year. That may or may not happen. That will have a huge effect on aquaponic cannabis and vegetable growers in Canada, depending on how that all shakes down. I think that's going to get held up in the courts, though. I really don't see that going to fruition at this moment. There's already a couple of companies coming together to form a lawsuit on that, which, yeah, it's going to happen.
So I was just looking at my deficiency guides and trying to add to what we're going to be talking about. One of the biggest deficiencies we see, and we're seeing it more and more lately, is a nitrogen deficiency. So people say, how the heck does that happen in aquaponics? And the reason they say, how does that happen in aquaponics, is because people overstock their fish. They have more fish than they should have. And what happens is their nitrate level runs way, way up. When they start getting above 80 parts per million, that nitrate actually starts blocking itself out. And Steve actually taught me this ways back. And the way we combat that on a temporary level is with something. We got it. What the heck is it? Steve?
Sodium molybdenum. I was trying to let you.
Molybdenum.
Sodium molybdenum.
Okay, so I'm looking at it. Yeah, molybdenum. If I could post something in here where people could see it, they'd understand what I meant. But it's molybdenum. And
you can screen share. You just hit share, a little green button in the bottom center.
Why don't you make that easier?
You hit that center, and then you click on the button that you have open on your window that's open that you want to share with the public. It doesn't get any easier.
Okay, I'm just not... Oh, there it is. Okay, so...
Cool.
There it is. If your plants look like that... Actually, that's not entirely accurate. That second picture is not accurate at all. But it's a nitrogen deficiency. So if you got a nitrogen deficiency and you've got too many, if your nitrogen level or nitrate level is above 80 parts per million, chances are this will help you temporarily, but you still need to get that nitrogen level down. You don't want to leave it up there like that. How do I get out of the screen share? There we go.
Press the button, though.
Hey, we're learning every day. I don't
know. Hey, what's new to all of us? Like, where's the button?
No. Okay, where's the but thanks for making fun of me. I appreciate that.
Oh man, no, we're having fun. Hey, you're a Texas boy. I know you can take it.
I can. So do we have any other questions from the crowd?
Sure, let me check here. Does anybody else have any other questions for Roger at True Aquaponics? What are the more common insects that you're seeing?
The most common are aphids, of course. And a lot of people ask me, I mean, every day I get asked, during the wintertime included, what do I do with these aphids? I'll tell you, my favorite thing to use is Joy dish soap from off the shelf at Walmart. And I hate Walmart, but, I mean, go to any big box store or whatever and buy some Joy. It used to be called Living Joy. Put 2 tablespoons in a gallon of water and spray them. It kills them on contact. The thing is, a lot of people don't understand, is you've got to do that a couple times a week for several weeks. Otherwise, they just keep on going. You won't get them all. There's no way to get them all in one shot. So you got to come back and hit them again and again, and they get fewer and fewer. And eventually, you will kill them all, but you can't stop. And that's where most people make their mistake, and they end up getting this huge infestation that kills everything they got. And they're like, well, your ideal didn't work. Well, yeah, it did. You just didn't follow through. So you got to do that. You got to find a way to kill them. The way we keep from getting the pest issue is potassium silicate. We spray that on a plant, or we put it in the system water, or actually, I do both.
I can't figure out where I'm at.
Well, you do have to be careful with the system water, just with pathogens, depending on what it is that you're keeping.
It can be, and you can also raise your pH. So we like to actually spray it on mostly once a week, and it takes about an eighth to a quarter of a teaspoon per gallon of water spraying it on. And what it does is it gives you a coat of what's similar to glass on the plant. And a couple of things will happen when you do that. One, bugs don't like to eat through it. Two, powdery mildew and other mold and mildew does not like to set roots there. And the reason for that is it's not easy for them to get into the plant. So they're not drawing any energy or any nutrient from the plant. So they land on it and they die. That is a proven fact. I've actually read the studies for it, though I cannot give you the link to those studies at the moment. I can go back and find them. We've got them on our website, but don't ask me to give that to you right this instant.
Can I address something? I'm going to add to something when you were bringing up the how you use your old Joy, or the old guy used to come on TV on Channel 7 on the educational channel on Saturday morning and share, had to mix stuff up, and he always had some Joy or some Ivory soap, you know, dishwashing liquid that he added as a wetting agent, or you found a way with the lemon style. I find that with the that works sometimes. I don't spray this on my plants, but the Lysol with lemon in it, it'll kill bugs. If you see a bug, you spray it with that, and it's pretty much, you know, it'll clean your kitchen and kill the bug. But getting back to the aphids, the reason I just wanted to throw this in, the reason that you have to continue to treat them, and it makes it work, is because when they get there, they lay eggs, and that's what we didn't bring up. They lay eggs, and what happens is you'll kill some off, and then the eggs will hatch. And then there'll be more and more, you know, so that's why, I mean, you'll probably have to do it anyway, because it's just a natural thing that happens. The aphids come to eat your plants, but a lot of the control comes from the continual treatment, so that you're, as the eggs hatch, you're killing them off too. And that's how you'll really thin it out in the end. And, you know, thanks. Forgive me.
We had a question from chat. Have you grown, you or any of your customers, done dual root zone planting with crops that aren't cannabis?
Steve, I'm going to let you take that one. I know some of my customers have, but my knowledge in that field is very, very slim.
Well, I was going to say, why don't you talk about your experiences, and then I'll jump in after. Oh, okay. So I've grown a wide range of crops in dual root zone plants, or dual root zone pots. It's really useful. Say if I have something that really likes a high pH or peculiar pH or peculiar nutrient mix on the soil, you can run that mix in the soil zone, you know, a higher pH or lower pH or whatever it is. You know, berries really like that, for example, and then run the lower half, your typical aquaponic setup. And then the other cool thing you can do is, so fruit trees. So the general rule of thumb is that the woodier the crop, the more it uses, the more soil it needs in its root zones. It needs more mycorrhizal fungi, the larger the root zone is, as a general rule of thumb. Sorry about the noises.
So just to jump in real quick.
If you're looking.
Oh, I just wanted to say, before you got too far into the fruit, you brought up the fruit, and it got me to remember suddenly. Marty, didn't your kid do some project where he grew like a giant pumpkin or something like that with a dual root zone? Or is that somebody else? For some reason, I thought that was Marty.
He was growing big pumpkins. Steve was doing that.
I did pumpkins, and I also did a giant competitive cabbage, a dual root zone cabbage.
How did that turn out, by the way? I think I forgot to ask you for the results.
For which one?
The cabbage.
The cabbage, we ended up winning. She got a $1,000 scholarship out of that. We ended up getting into the contest for the $10,000, $100,000, whatever the big scholarship was.
Did you win that one?
I honestly don't know. That was right before everything got shook up at the aquaponics store. So.
Well, I'm proud of you for the one you did win.
But yeah, so we actually did a dual root zone cabbage, and the cabbage was larger. The smallest leaf, or the largest leaf of any from our cabbage was larger than the entire cabbage of every single other competitor at the school. Like it was literally like four times the size of the next cabbage, and they were from the same seed stock. You know, it just allowed that seed to grow significantly better. And it's that marriage of terrestrial microbes and aquatic microbes that really allows you to get that better improved terpene profile, flavonoid profile, and plant growth. You know, in the case of fruit trees, you get accelerated growth rate. Heavier production in flowers, you get better tasting fruit. Assuming you're dosing chloride and silica in the proper ratios, you will get tomatoes that taste better than stuff out of the soil. You will get cannabis with wider ranges and higher levels of terpenes. Pretty much across the board, every single test we've ever done in the side-by-side, we've done terpenes. And if you've been listening to the show, you guys will know that we're doing an enormous, we have 582 plants in the outdoor right now, and we're going to be comparing those against cuts, exact same cuts in the indoor and the aquaponics, and doing comparisons across over 100 different cultivars on chemovar comparisons between soil and aquaponics. So we're going to do the largest scale plant essential oil comparison of anyone doing aquaponic and soil comparisons of anyone that's ever done at university or corporation. More than all of them combined to date. So this one test will have more data than everyone's ever done combined to date on aquaponics soil versus aquaponics in one single test. And that'll be an ongoing test. We're going to continue doing that, you know, from here on out, every single time we're doing it. Because of state testing, we have to do all of these testing regimens already for terpene and cannabis and heavy metals and everything else. So we'll be testing those, you know, from here on out, and then also running those same cuts in our outdoor, and then just running comparisons, chemovar comparisons, heavy metal comparisons, tissue sample comparisons. No one's doing anything like this for lettuce, tomatoes, peppers, and this is what I'll be presenting at this year at the Aquaponics Association, is just how far ahead the cannabis industry is compared to, you know, where most of the rest of the aquaponics industry is. It's just, it's not even a contest. You know, we're testing for, you know, 50 to 100 different essential oils or different, you know, data points in plant tissue versus three, you know, or five. You know, it's not even close. we're learning a tremendous amount about aquaponics in a way and a better understanding than anyone's doing in any other ways right now, and really gaining immense amount of knowledge, and knowledge that we can turn back around and flip back to lettuce producers to make better tasting lettuce, to improve the shelf stability and shelf life, to reduce the chance of bacterial leaf spot, to reduce the chance of powdery mildew outbreaks, to reduce, you know, taking the knowledge we're learning from the cannabis industry and improving vegetable production and aquaponics. And that's the reason why I really love going back to the aquaponics community after we, you know, do a bunch of work with the cannabis stuff is, hey, this is all the stuff that we've been grinding our teeth on, and we actually have, you know, the funding to grind our teeth on this and to experiment and then come back and teach the vegetable growers, hey, this worked really well. A silica, for example, you know, can increase your lettuce shelf stability by up to a week. You know, if you're selling lettuce and you're an aquaponics farm, if your lettuce is lasting a week longer than the stuff the customer gets from the grocery store, of course they're going to spend an extra buck on your head of lettuce. You know, that makes a big difference if you're a soccer mom buying lettuce every week, you know, for your kids' sandwiches. So this is the kind of stuff that the cannabis, or not even the cannabis industry, but the vegetable end of the aquaponics industry really needs to start paying attention to. If they're going to be able to start to move into the broader agricultural market, and they simply just haven't to date.
Now, yeah, I can't wait to see my lettuce sit in that drawer at the bottom of the fridge for an extra week before I chuck it.
Everyone's still so stuck on, you know, feed the fish, magic happens, plants grow, and no one's really trying to push much past it, and it's been frustrating. And it's, you know, cannabis kind of forces that issue in a whole wide range of ways.
Well, we're trying, Steve. We're all trying.
I remember when I first got started back in 2013, that feed the fish, magic happens. Yeah, that's a great video to watch, but it's not reality. Steve, you'd asked about pests earlier. Somebody in the audience asked about pests. Another pest we've seen a huge impact from are caterpillars. And don't get me wrong, we love butterflies, we love moths, because they actually will help to pollinate our plants. Unfortunately, they lay eggs on our plants, and when those eggs hatch, we end up with caterpillars. So we actually carry a product that I've got up on the screen right now. It takes maybe a tablespoon, 2 tablespoons per gallon if you really want to get harsh on them, and this is totally organic. It is organically listed, although we can't carry the organic label because we buy in bulk and then break it down in smaller quantities. But it is organic. It's bacteria, BT, very common, but very few people sell it in small quantities. If you buy it at Home Depot or Lowe's in a liquid form, you're going to end up with something that may or may not work depending on how old it is sitting on their shelf. So get this in the dry form. Even if it's not us you get it from, get it in a dry form that's flowable. That way you can put it in a bug sprayer and spray your plants top and bottom. And when I say top and bottom, I mean top of the leaves, bottom of the leaves, spray everywhere, and take care of your caterpillar issue. And I just wanted to add that in there right quick.
No, I want to back that up, too. Caterpillars have been the number one problem we've been dealing with here in Oklahoma with the outdoor. I got, you know, with all the rest of my insect menagerie, we have the mites are on lockdown. You know, everything else we have on lockdown. We have the occasional grasshopper that flies in, whatever. But the caterpillars really have been the one that's been kind of tricky, and we've been hitting them with a combination of BT and Trichogamma, and I think I'll definitely order from you the next time. I didn't realize you had sold that, or I would have ordered from you instead of where I ordered from earlier this week.
That's right. It happens. I'm not worried about that. We just hope we can help somebody out there or as many people as possible. Again, we sell in small quantities, so it's 8 ounces, and 8 ounces is going to last you a long time. And this stuff has a shelf life of 3 years. So the bag you actually see it in on the screen, we have vacuum sealed it, so if you buy it and you decide, you know what, my caterpillars ain't such a big deal right now, I'm going to wait. 3 years later, if you decide, hey, my caterpillar's out of control, open it up, it still works. on that. Probably has a much longer shelf life, but that's all we can guarantee, because that's just the way, you know, it's what it's sold to us.
Awesome. Well, that's really good to know. It's definitely something that I'll have to work with you on getting a hold of. I know that you're on Eastern time zone. Is there anything else you wanted to touch on? And we'll let you go.
I'm actually on Central, but I have a very early morning. So, let me think. System startup for people starting new systems. If you're brand new, one of the things you really need to do, and Steve hates this product. He doesn't hate it. He just would prefer something different. And I'll tell you what that is. This is what we carry because it's easy and cheap. It's sodium thiosulfate. I can't say it right. It removes chlorine and chloramine from your water very quickly. There's two reasons to have it. One is to, you know, remove it, obviously. But the other is if you get in a situation where you lose a lot of water from your system really quick, pipe break, pipes fall apart, whatever, and you have to replace your water very quickly, this is the stuff that will save you from losing your fish and bacteria and worms that are in your system that you put there on purpose. Because if that chlorine or chloramine gets to those fish or worms or bacteria, it will kill them. So this will save you from that. So I tell everyone, please keep a pound or two of this on your shelf, you know, in the closet, just in case. If you end up in a situation where you have lost a lot of water and you have to replace it very quickly, this will save you from crashing your system. Let's see. Go back to the other thing that was in there. Fake fish. This is a product that also, because of Steve, we picked up a few years back. It's ammonium sulfate, and you can use it to cycle your system before you add fish. And we originally started out saying, hey, only use live fish. But after we learned about this product and learned about how good it actually is and how safe it really is, we have switched over. Instead of killing fish, use this. Put it in your system in the recommended dosages and cycle your system and get yourself to where your system's ready for fish and it's also ready for plants. You'll hear us also say put plants in immediately, and we will never change from that, I don't think. Plants won't do good at first, but they will pick up. But the plants being in there will start adding bowel matter to your media beds and helping the system along. But this product not only helps you cycle the first time, but let's say you lose all your fish for any reason. You do something stupid like we did and drop tomato plants into the fish tank and the fish gorge on them and die the next day. Or you harvest all your fish and it just happens to be a time where you cannot get to the store or fish farm and get more fish immediately to replace them, you can use this to supplement those fish being in the system until such time as you can replace them. So that makes it, to me, a very, very important thing to have on the shelf just in case anything ever goes wrong. Let's see, what else do we have? Oh, pond liner. Look at all that stuff. Water heaters, water pumps, air pumps, water testing. We're not going to look at that, but just real quick in self-promotion, water heaters. We actually build these here in our shop. We only have one available right now, which is a 6950 watt. So it's kind of for a smaller system, 400, 500 gallons or less. If you need to heat your water, this is not the way to go if you got a 1,000-gallon system. And I hate to put myself down that way. It's just the way it is. And then, of course, the pond liners, if you're interested in any of those, we have them. We get them delivered directly to your door at a pretty good price. So I'm going to quit tooting my own horn there and back off and let Steve have it again. And thanks, guys, for having me. It's been great being here, and hope to see you all soon.
Awesome. Always fun having you on, and thanks for taking the time to educate us on some of the veggie side and to talk about the new service that we're launching, and being able to help people out with some of the more complicated part of aquaponics. I'll bring it to the masses a little easier. How do people find you if they want to, you know, get stuff from you or learn from you? Or what's your Facebook group and what's your website?
Yeah, it'd probably be a good idea to share that kind of stuff, right? So let me open the web page back up and do that kind of stuff right quick. I'm so interested in helping people, I forgot to, sell myself, but I appreciate you bringing it up. So let me reshare again.
Yeah, while you're doing that, I just wanted to say I'm glad you're getting to do that, because I wanted to ask you about the pond liners and stuff like that. But I can look, now you're bringing it back up, I can look at that on your website. Because I'm helping a guy do a climate-controlled indoor grow, but it's only going to be a small laboratory, like four by eight beds. So we're going to need liners for those. You know, we got a decent budget, so I'd like to talk to you about that. I'm in. So I see. I'll give it back.
So we'll take care of you on that. Just go to truaquaponics.com / store. I don't know what that EN's doing in there. But there it is.
Just a translation version of your website. That's all.
I guess. I don't need translation. What the hell? What is that? Anyway.
English.
So, yeah, I know what English. Yeah, never mind. So once you get there, truaquaponics.com/store. Or if you just go to truaquaponics.com, don't want to do the store, you'll get to our original blog we started a great many years ago, and it's got all kinds of stuff in there. And then, of course, you can see Truaquaponics Store is listed right here. Nutrient deficiency guides, which a lot of people find helpful. And the last thing we posted actually here was top mistakes made in aquaponic systems, and that actually was picked up by a scientific paper and used, believe it or not. That doesn't make me famous. Don't even go there. Anyway, that's how you find us. Also, if you need to email us through aquaponics@gmail.com, you can text us at 214-489-2311. Don't call us. I probably won't answer. But you can text me, and I will answer.
Awesome. Sounds great. Well, thanks again for taking the time to share with us, and we'll see you again soon.
Can't wait. It was great to be here. Guys, I got to get to bed. It's way past my bedtime. I'm an old guy.
Take care, buddy.
Good night, Roger. Thank you.
Good night, everybody. It's great to see everyone, and hope everyone learned at least one thing.
Hopefully. All right. That was a lot of fun. Thanks a lot. We have Fish Conjure Guy. How you been, man? It's been a minute since you've been on the show.
Sorry, I had to get back to the screen where I could under the mic. It's not as quick as Hangouts. Been good. Ready to throw this fucking tent that I've been setting up the last hour while everybody's been talking. Two of these zipper handles broke off while I was setting it back up. And for anybody who set up a tent, I'm connecting the body to the top, which is, even with the zipper handle, usually the only annoying part of the whole damn thing. So, I think I'm ready to kill it with fire at this point. But, yeah, life's been good, man. Just been really busy. Just getting ready to get a new AC set up pretty soon so I can finally get a grow going again. What about you, Steve? How's everything on your end?
Doing good down in Oklahoma. What have you been doing? Have you done a run since you've been on the show last?
I think I finished up the the banana hammock from Ethos Genetics, that was really good. I definitely am glad I kept a mother of that, and I'm running a couple more phenos this next run with a few things from a buddy of mine, Route 6.4 Gardens. But I have not done a run in a while. Wife and I got a new house, so I've been taking care of the move and had other life priorities. So just been keeping pretty busy with that and work. But, yeah, just keeping all my mothers healthy and happy in the meantime. Priorities.
Awesome. So what are you growing these days?
Let's see. Fruit and veggie or Jamaican tomatoes?
Jamaican tomatoes.
I love those Jamaican tomatoes. See, right now it's I've just got the keeper mother of my banana hammock, and then I've got those got knocked over in the move. Couple more banana hammock phenos, and then I've got from my buddy Route 6.4 Gardens a couple purple punch crossed with Bubba Kush, and I'm pretty excited about that one because I just topped one of the little seedlings that I had on that and just threw a little 4-inch section of it, just a little 4-inch long branch, nothing big to it, into the trash can in the kitchen. Came back an hour later and it smelled like there was just a bag of nugs that had been left out on the counter. So I'm pretty excited to see how that one turns out. And that's pretty much it.
Sweet. Well, God dang, have you been doing well?
Yeah, aside from this fucking tent, everything's been good.
You were just out at, did you end up going to Indo?
I did not. I had to work that weekend.
Blasphemy.
Hey, man, gotta pay the bills.
All right. What about you, Marty? You just got through a pretty nasty move. How you been? Bueller? All right, well, I guess Marty stepped away for a moment. Hopefully Marty will be back. What about you, Roger? How's your garden been? All right, I guess Roger's having technical problems. Hold on. Roger?
I'm just the only one who wants to talk to you anymore.
Apparently so. There we go.
It's okay, buddy. I won't leave you.
Is there Roger there? Roger, I'm muted.
All right.
There you go, Roger. We can hear you now.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
That's weird because I just shut everything down to reboot because I've lost, oh, I hate to say it, I don't know, I've kind of lost all control. It's just, you know, so it's real, yeah, we're going to have to learn this format. It's going to be fun. Yeah, what's going on? I've been frantically trying to figure out how I hit something and I went to a page I didn't know how to get out of. We're doing a lot of things out here. We got a new hemp company started and glad to be part of the and invited to be part of the Carolina Canna KANEH connection. We've got a three-pronged operation going where we're going to incorporate a greenhouse situation. We're going to have a climate-controlled indoor aquaponic dual root zone grow. So this will be the first time I got to really build something serious in the dual root zone aquaponics, and I'm really excited about that because. You know, and you know, it's not anything I can't talk about, but there's not a lot of talk about that. But the bottom line is the guys that are all involved, invested into this venture, have a 300-acre old corn farm. They said, well, they grew a lot of stuff, but they did a lot of deer corn and stuff for hunting and all. It's on an island, you know, on the East Coast, and it's pretty cool, you know. When you ride out to something, you know, it's a really interesting and enlightening feeling. I really enjoyed because I didn't understand it. We were riding out towards the ocean, and I saw this building this market that I've recognized from you know, when I was younger, and we used to run out there on the islands all the time. And he goes, "We're here." And I go, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Let's see that field." And I mean, that field went for as far as I could freaking see. So it's like you could barely see trees on the other side. And then we pulled in the driveway, and it's this beautiful oak laden forest with pine tree, oak and pine tree forest out on the island. And we drove through into this beautiful opening where they have a nice home and a stock pond. And you go to the backside and you see the other side and other end of all those fields that they had, you know. I got a video, but it hadn't been appropriate, or we hadn't had the time to really share it at this point. So, you know, I'm going to get something really prepared so I can share. I can show you the farm. You know, I can show you entering the farm. So that's what we're doing. Outside, I got some really cool things. My citrus plants are hanging in there. One of them's going crazy. I believe it's the blood orange is taking off, but the heat, just like Roger said, from True Aquaponics, he said that it was, you know, we've had so many days, like today was 95. It said the forecast was 95 at 2 in the afternoon and feels like 104 and 91 at 6 p.m. You know, that's kind of days we've been having for a while ourselves. And so, you know, some of the peppers are doing really good. But, I mean, I've got them strategically placed in an area that during the hottest part of the day, like, say, 2 to 5, they're behind an oak tree in the shade. So that's, you know, I can't leave them all there, but I'm just trying to get them to keep them alive. So I got my citrus. The bananas are doing great. Got a lot of tomatoes starting to form because it has been so hot, but every time you get a cool day, I don't know what it is. I did start a new water therapy on them this week, so maybe that's what it is. But next month, I should have a whole bunch of great food to talk about because everything's starting to flower because of that. I guess as we get further towards fall out of the summer, the way my property set up, the sun goes down at more of an angle, so it gets behind the trees sooner. So as long as you have light, you're doing pretty good. You don't always have to have full sun, and sometimes being able behind a tree in a certain area at the hottest part of the day will really make your plants go. They'll get that nice evening, you know, warm down sun, and then they get the whole morning up till about 1 or 2 o'clock when it's unbearable. And if you're trying to do outside, I found that this works really well. And I'm actually going to build a little thing there. So just to see if it all works out in the long run. But I want to give a shout out to Malik Spider and Wendy from Sonibus and Steve/Citrix Genetics and Kaya. I've got some really great stuff going on of theirs. I tell you what, every one of them keeps surprising me in different ways, but a couple of Maliks are really interesting because they are so sick. The tops have just turned into like this massive, I don't know. I'm going to take some pictures and again, maybe get a chance to do something on the show in the next couple of weeks where I can actually put something together and show you some things about the great genetics we got through our friends in the Regenerative Organic Cannabis Conference. And then members like Malik. Malik is part of that. He wasn't there when I was there, but But thank you, Malik, for gifting me those. Those are all, all sick. All six of them are sick. We haven't sexed anything yet. We're at that point, a foot to a foot. We're getting to maybe 14 to 16 inches. And Wendy's are the tallest. So I'm not sure. I always guess wrong. I still think it's very hard to tell if it's a male or a female until you know it's a male or a female. Because you don't really know what the genetic background is on something like that. But Wendy's are the tallest. And I tell you what, I picked up one today. And if the males stink more than the females, then I would bet it was a male because it stinks. And you give it the stem rub. Thank you, Mr. Green Beans. But are you giving the stem rub? And yeah, the nastier it is, the better male, supposedly, I guess. So I'm really happy about that stuff either way. It's the first time I've done regulars in about 4 or 5, 6 years. So I'm really excited because it got kind of boring, actually, using, not that I love it. I think it's great for medical patients that want to have a really good grow, a good quality grow with a fair amount of yield. I think all the feminized products out there are great. But as far as a grower and coming up from where before feminized and auto flowers, I really like the idea that I've gotten the opportunity to get some awesome genetics. You can just see them. The stalks are, they're standing up like sticks. It's like freaking bamboo at the bottom, which, I'm not looking at so much at cloning right now. It's just learning what I got. But I love to see when I've got them in 6-inch pots in ProMix and some organic nutrients and a little bit of lactobacillus. And these things are sick. I mean, as far as the stalks are, maybe it's just because I haven't grown regulars and started, but I think it's actually I got gifted some great genetics. And on that hand, I want to give a shout out to Vision and the people of White Buffalo up in Canada. And they're on these islands, and I can't pronounce the name. In fact, I hear it, and it sounds so cool. But these guys have really done a real good job with a bunch of landrace genetics. And I've got a few of those that I'll be doing next. So that's what's going on with me. I'm trying some new interesting strains with some great breeders and strong geneticists and farmers. And, yeah, that's about it, Steve. Thanks.
Hey, Marty's back. Marty, how you been? I know you went through a move and a bunch of other stuff.
Oh, yeah, my mic's probably still echoey. Doing good, just getting set up at the new house. I haven't really got much garden-wise, I guess, set up yet, but got the office hardwired today for internet. And, hopefully get started on setting up I'll have a 2-car garage for a flower room and a big high bay shop for a nursery. And, haven't done much gardening-wise, just a lot of moving. It's been kind of a nightmare. And, other than that, just doing a lot of unpacking, a lot of moving stuff around, fun stuff like that.
Cool. What are you going to pop first as far as strains when you get going?
I actually have a friend of mine that has a whole bunch, kind of like a collection of moms. I think it's about 30 or so strains, 32 strains. And so, everything from like 398 Bubba Kush, there's, I think, Jaeger, there's Forum Cut Cookies, there's Gelato Cut Cookies, there's Sunset Sherbert, there's a whole list of them that, he wants to make sure are backed up. So if we're both running the same set of genetics, then, if something happens to either one of our plants, then we can recover the genetics. So he's nice enough to extend his collection to me. So I will graciously accept and cut a bunch of clones off of him. So we'll probably get the mom in and get the nursery in first, get that all dialed in, ready to go, and then start setting up the flower.
Awesome.
I'm glad to see you in your new place, too, man. You look like you're, well, I can just see you painting, but, I look like you're a little, you look comfortable there. You got your Silver Surfer, or that's not the Silver Surfer, that's the, what is that you got there? That's your bait machine there.
Oh, this here? Yeah, this is my Buddha vaporizer.
Buddha, yeah, I couldn't remember, yeah.
Yeah, and I got my bong over here. Always 420. I don't know if you guys can see that or not, but it says 420 right there. mostly just getting stuff set up. I'm in the office space right now, and there's another place we'll be able to set up a greenhouse just down the way here. There used to be a single wide trailer down there, so It's already got power and water hooked up to it. So it shouldn't need too much to do. A little bit of leveling it off. The pad needs to be a little longer. But they left me a tractor with a big hydraulic bucket on the front of it, so I can do a lot of that stuff myself, which is awesome. And, you know, I probably won't really be worried about getting the greenhouse in for until I get the indoor all set up and running. But we have 11 and a half acres here zoned to do just about anything that I want to do. So it's going to be fun. I don't know what type of licensing I'll end up going with for recreational yet, but definitely starting out with maxing out my medical grow so that I can grow for patients again, which is great. And then we can just kind of launch forward from there, pick up a recreational license after we max that out, because then we can continue to run our medical patients after we get our recreational licensing. So that's already going to be squared away. So it'll be nice to just kind of ramp up production. And but yeah, it's been a lot. We're switching, you know, switched houses. So we're all moved in over here. And that, you know, again, the process of moving was really kind of a nightmare. Some of the people were kind of a nightmare too. But yeah, it's great to be here and have some space and not, you know, my neighbor's way the fuck over there and way the fuck over there. And I like them that way. You know, I've spent the last like 14 years with people right next to me, you know, 10 feet from my door on either side. And even though we had a big backyard, you know, it just isn't quite the same. And I grew up on a 220-acre horse ranch, so for me it was, you know, it's been a labor of love in terms of getting out of that spot and back to somewhere else. It was one thing when we could grow outside and kind of make use of the space, but, you know, when we couldn't even do that anymore, you know, that became difficult. But here, we have so much here now. It's amazing. We have, I just got done eating plums off the plum tree. There's apples. There's two different kinds of apples, three different kinds of fig trees, you know, just all kinds of stuff. Like, I don't even anticipate, like, needing anything for nutrients. Like, we also have plenty of, like I said, 11 and a half acres, tons of oak trees, morels everywhere in the springtime. So, you know, there's definitely way more resources here that we want to take advantage of in addition to just the space and less regulation. So it's definitely a relief in a lot of ways to be out of where I'm at, but at the same time, there's still so much stuff to go through and unpack and things to do and set up. And like, even right now, I only have one aquaponics system online and all my fish are in that one, and it's not only half set up. You know, so I really want to finish getting the rest of the house taken care of and kind of find a place for stuff and clear out the boxes that are in the shop so that I can start setting all that up. And I'll probably build a couple of new systems out of new stuff for the flower room and use kind of my existing ones for the bedroom, at least the rough plan right now, but we'll see how it goes.
Listen, do you feel like it's your home? Do you feel like you're home now? Sounds like it.
Can't really say that just yet. I would say, like, right now it sort of feels like a really big Airbnb, you know, with all of our stuff in it. Like, that's kind of how it still feels. And there's just so much more room. It's going to take a little while, I think, especially for the kids to feel like that we're not just on some, like, super long vacation. And especially my youngest, which is two, you know, she really doesn't have a firm grasp on what's going on. You know, her whole little world's been turned upside down. So it's been interesting. You can't explain too much. You know, she understands almost enough just to make it worse. You know, like, so she knows that we're not going back to the other house, but she can't really comprehend why at this point. And so there's definitely some struggle there, but eventually this will be all she remembers. She won't even remember the other house. She's so young. So, you know, it's one of those things. It's obviously going to be better than staying there. It's not like you know, we're going to stay there just to appease the two-year-old. But it's just interesting watching, you know, the dynamic, how everybody feels as you move and all that change. It's just, and we have a lot of it, too. My wife has a new job and a new house. I'm about to start a new job and a new house. And we're about, you know, like, about to set up, you know, all the garden stuff in all new ways and kind of, like, trying to figure out how all that stuff works. It's interesting to kind of watch everybody kind of carve out their situation. My dad's going to be able to come live with us. There's, like, a little cabin, you know, so he'll be able, and for you guys who don't know, he got diagnosed with Parkinson's, so he kind of, he needs a place. That was a big reason why we moved also, is that we don't have any room left in that house to fit anyone, and he really needs a place to live. He lives in a really old, I mentioned I lived on a horse ranch, and he lives in the original ranch house from, like, 1904, and it's just not really set up for someone who has, you know, special needs, so. So yeah, he's going to come stay in the cabin, which is great. We're having a shower, like special shower and stuff installed in there. So it's kind of a slow process as we get everything together, but it, you know, it's already obviously way better than it was before. So just kind of, you know, both overwhelmed and excited at the same time, I guess is probably the because there's still so much left to do. Like we're here and it's great. When I'm stressed out, I can go hang out in my front yard or check out the view or whatever. But, which is way better than before. I don't have to worry about, you know, whatever my neighbor is doing or making noise or none of that. So it's definitely going to be a little while, I think, before it really feels like home. But it's definitely getting there. Every day we kind of get a little bit closer the more you find a place for something and you unpack most of the boxes and everything else. So just enjoy it. Thanks, Indiga. Appreciate it.
That's really cool, man. But I can hear it in your voice. So, I mean, yeah, like you said, your baby's not going to know much. You know, it's going to be just awesome that you've got a place now with all that space. I mean, to find a place that you could afford and move in with your family, your young family, and you're eating fruit from trees on that land. I mean,
yeah.
Right there, that's like, whoa, holy shit.
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
Pretty cool. I can see the way I mean, it's hard for me to see your eyes, but I could see your eyes light up when you said, I'd stay to Plum from out back.
They're great, too. If I can get the birds to leave them the fuck alone, that'd be great. But we let the cats outside now, so we kept them inside for a while. So I'm hoping the cats will chase them out a little bit. But, yeah, it's just full of Plum and just delicious. So can't wait.
Fantastic. What's up, Steve? So are you going to do any hemp growing out there? Well, I'll just ask you a question.
Yeah, I probably will. You know, it's everywhere. Like right now, I don't know if you guys have driven around like Southern Oregon or probably, I assume other places in Oregon too, but I would say 80% of the agricultural crops that you can like just drive around, you can see, not counting trees, because you still got trees and vineyards.
Right.
You have to throw those out. But all the fields that used to be for like corn and soy and stuff like that, that a lot of times were just growing to get subsidized. I would say probably around 80% of that is all industrial hemp right now. It's just everywhere. Like just today I drove from Gold Hill to Shady Cove here in Southern Oregon, just as part of my IT work. And just both sides of the road, you know, headed over there was just, oh, look, there's more hemp. Oh, look, there's more hemp. I'm talking fields of hemp, not like, you know, oh, there's somebody, because obviously you've been able to see cannabis growing around Oregon for a while.
Yeah.
You can usually tell, you know, it's like in smart pots and there's a fence around it. And I mean, no, this is like when you're driving by cornfields, it's just in rows and rows and rows and rows and rows.
That's what I was talking about earlier. That's what I just got to be a part of. I mean, we're right on the ground floor. There's the farms there, there's some machines there. You know, that's what's really cool is that it was already a farm, so there's some machinery there. But I've got 300 acres to, like you said, it's going to be like industrial hemp. You know, now I'd like to see that if we could do something. I think, well, they're talking about maybe looking at putting buildings or greenhouses, hothouses or whatever out there later. But I think they really want to go into the direction. I think they're going to look at a test size, you know, after so long. I think that's a smart way to go anyway, right? Start with what you can manage. And then if you make the money, then you can expand and expand or build, you know, like we got Greg up in North Carolina has got his own really very good business where it's all indoor and climate controlled. You know, and that's the thing, you know, like, but you said industrial hemp, and that's basically what I've got into with that. We've got the three locations, so we're going to do three different ways or methods, so to speak.
Right.
But in, you know, and the small climate controlled room is going to be, the proving ground for whether or not they're willing to build, you know, facilities out there in those cornfields, like you said, that are now industrial hemp. But even I look at it like this, even if we put it and filled them up with industrial hemp, you know, that would, you'd still have a really good business and really be, you know, there's so much use for it, you know. So I'd rather do industrial hemp in a way than fight medical, you know, all the policies and the hoops you may or may not. At this time, we don't have a problem with the medical side of it, like you guys out loud. But, change is coming, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, change will be a coming. So, you know, it'd be nice to get some grows in where you just get, like, shitloads out in the field and get to experiment and maybe have some houses here and there. But, yeah, that's what I'm just so excited. I'm sorry. I had to jump in there.
Oh, that's fine. Go ahead.
It's the same situation, you know, that we're talking about. But.
Yeah, and don't let a lot of people fool you with their industrial hemp label, because there's still a lot of them are still growing CBD flower, and they're still going to probably, you know, at least chuck it and send the flower to be extracted for CBD isolate. And then also using the biomass, right, the stems, and even root balls, I guess, if you want to. A lot of people are finding value in that. But, you can use sell the biomass in addition to, you know, the CBD flower itself. And so it becomes, you know, a little bit different than I think what your traditional growers have been doing, both on the hemp side and the cannabis side, in that you're like, well, now you can make use of some other parts of the plant as a cannabis grower. Because really it's the same plant, right? I mean, we're only talking like, you know, 0.1% THC difference between what's considered, well, I guess even 0.01 if you really want to get technical, percentage difference between what is considered hemp and what is considered cannabis.
Right.
Legally. So
well, it's all cannabis, but yeah, pot and hemp. I'm kind of going pot and hemp because it's all cannabis. And
it is all cannabis. And there is no marijuana. Like, that's
right.
The name that they use to scare people. So that's the only term that I hate using, I guess, for the most part, you know, because it's inherently racist. Like, that's just what it comes down to. So I don't. And so it is all cannabis, if you want to get technical about it. I personally don't think it should matter, obviously, either way. But
right. What it is.
You do now have the letter that came out talking about how THC extracted from what would technically be hemp could still be considered as legal. Steve, I don't know if you want to weigh in on this. I know I think I either sent it to you or we talked about it a little bit, but essentially it was saying that the THC that is extracted from CBD, dominant or whatever, basically when you grew the plant originally, it had less than 0.3% THC in order to to qualify as hemp, but there's still 0.3 THC in there, right? Like that's
that
still-
isolate is technically the only legal THC under federal law. That is a
loophole. So if you originally grew, like, let's say cherry wine, right, which is, you know, like 20, let's just say like a 20-to-1 strain. So you got, you know, 20 parts CBD, one part THC as your ratio for your growing. Well, your one part THC is technically legal THC, but how do you, I don't know how they plan on controlling that or anything. I don't know, Steve, if you looked into it anymore after that, that's last I heard about it.
For which part? On that? As far as the legality of that? Or?
Yeah, has anybody pushed that at all? Or like?
Well, no, because there's, you'd have to be growing acres and acres and acres and acres to have anything that's viable enough for commercial sale. So it's like, yes, it technically exists, but, you know, and then you have the other, and this is something that no one ever talks about, but it's technically an illegal gray area, is what about all the cannabinoid acetates, CBD acetate, THC acetate, CBN acetate, CBG acetate, you know, no one, and those are all technically not scheduled.
I love this. This is the perfect information. Yeah.
Oh, but that's something that unless you have quite the chemistry set and a lot of know-how, like, it's useless.
Like you said, you have to have hundreds of acres to make it worthwhile. That's what I got out of that was there. It's there, but you've got to have a big enough. And I've known that from my times in hydroponic produce. I just didn't have a big enough farm to make money. I didn't lose money, but I was out there working every day just to break even. You know, and I wasn't living in Oregon where I could have them companion plants that made me happy at the end of the day. Well, I did love my tomatoes and cucumbers, don't get me wrong, and I grow some hellacious peppers. But, yeah, I think that's real important to understand that when you talk about that it takes hundreds of acres. You know, you got to have a massive farm to be able to have enough plants to use that 0.3, you know, for anything or to accumulate it, I think you said.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I think the interesting thing is that pretty soon there's going to be a lot of people that have acres and acres and acres to make it worthwhile. And I think the question that comes up, at least in my mind and I'm sure a few others, is after it's extracted, how do you know where it came from? Like, once it's already extracted, how can you tell the difference between THC that's been extracted from, say, cherry wine versus THC that's been extracted from, say, Bubba Kush? Like, how can you tell afterwards?
I think it would be about, like, just percentages. I mean, just like it is now. I mean, it would be.
Once you extracted and concentrated, it wouldn't be, like, if you, for instance, if you separated it, right? Like, if you made CBD isolate and isolated all the CBD out of it, and all you had, or you broke it down to pure crystallized THC, how would you know the difference? I couldn't come up with a way. I'm obviously not a chemist or anything, but it would. I don't know how they would regulate that. Like, how could you be like, well, this is obviously not THC. How would you know?
Well, I think the whole point is that you could accumulate it, and at that point, they're going to come up with a regulation or a law. You
right.
know, when they see people starting to do what Steve was bringing up, and, you know, if you want to elaborate more, Steve, it was a nice conversation, but I'd love to hear more about that, you know, like what Marty's talking about, and you were on a roll. So.
Which part?
About... like the different things that are still available, and I just wanted to bring up that point, and then
no, there's a bunch of, like, all that stuff I'm talking about is very, like, very quasi-legal, fringe, like, like
not Great technically area. Illegal. It's an
Great area, yeah. Way.
And if you guys look it up, there's a whole history about some of those stuff. What was the name of that book? The Art of Modern Hash Making. There's a, if you can find it, it's a 1970s book, The Art of Modern Hash Making, that has a whole bunch of cool recipes and fun chemistry if you're really looking for cool rabbit holes. It's a good one.
Yeah, there's some people that stayed alive and got through the 60s that got to write books in the 70s when they came out of the LSD haze and all that, and they were very creative and wrote some real, there's a lot of awesome books. Oh, look on Ronin. I suggest look on Ronin Publishing. Ronin seems to be the one that would carry more of the dark side or the subterranean style.
There's some few digital copies floating around and stuff like that. So. We've been just finishing up the start. I tweaked my back on Sunday, so I've been trying to, I've been a little bit of a cripple this week, but other than that, I've been all right. Making sure we manage the caterpillars, and that's really been about it. We got, with our IPM and stuff, we've been crushing it on everything else except for the caterpillars, really. Trying to, now that we have we got some stuff going on for that. We're not hurting, but, you know, it's been the one thing that's been present that's been a little bit annoying to deal with, so.
Well, I'm glad your head, I want to personally say, too, that I'm glad your head healed, or, you know, that big bang on the head you had two or three ago.
My head real good on the rail. That was funny. I tripped right over the thing and slammed my head on the crossbeam. So, you know me.
Well, like they said, they hit the, I wouldn't aware of this, but you basically hit the hardest part of your head, that, like, where you would headbutt somebody, so. It's like, you know, not that you would headbutt anybody, but, you know, it's...
So you're just been, looking at different cultivars, seeing what's doing well in Oklahoma, what isn't going to do well in Oklahoma, what likes the heat, what isn't, and trying to see what's going on, so, yeah. Other than that, just finishing up construction, we got... About two of the three bays pretty much finished. We got to do a little bit of plumbing left on the third bay. And then we're getting close to getting the sumps in. And then once the sumps are in, we can get the nursery and the first two bays online pretty quickly. So we got the pumps here, waiting on the blowers to get here. And, yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. And looking forward to doing everything, got our mother list going. We'll talk a little bit about that on a different episode. I want to get Chase and Bane on the show and have them come on and talk about what it's been like to put this together here, especially since we're getting close to finishing up. Figure we'll do an episode live from there once we finally have the water running through everything and we'll get whatever everyone that helped build it on there and do kind of a cool episode. Other than that, just dealing with the rain. Cutting cane. Well, I haven't. The other guys have. You know, much love to them. And then, hey, putting up the LSTs. You know, putting nets up for the flower stuff and flower. Just trying to make sure if we get some winds. You know, we get a lot of thunderstorms out here. Just want to make sure that, you know, if we get some gust ups, that we support the plants. We have a couple of different cross braced plants and, you know, stakes in there to keep the plants from breaking in the wind. So. Other than that, just doing construction, trying to get ready. We have new sets of regulations that go into effect on the 27th. So we're just trying to make sure we're going to be compliant, making sure that we're not missing anything, making sure that once the new regs go into effect that we're going to be compliant, you know, as of that day as well with the new regs. And, you know, typical normal cannabis headache. You know, if you run a cannabis business, you know, you run a compliance business with a cannabis company on the side.
So. Oh, yeah, that's a perfect example. Yeah, just like provided testing. I mean, how many times we talked about that? You know, that's awesome to hear that we're going to get to, you know, that we know a couple of good friends we can send testing to that we can trust the results, at least, and it'll be the results. You know, it won't be some
big giant corporation or somebody.
And, Marty, did you want to talk about the class at all, or do you want to
say that? Yeah, sure, we can talk about it. You know, where I think we set the dates for October class, right?
Yeah.
We have an on-site class here, commercial cannabis. So hopefully we'll, by then we should definitely have the nursery online, probably the flower room too. So we'll be able to go through all that stuff. I also have lots of stuff that I'm harvesting right now for making nutrients. So we'll be covering definitely fermenting apples and plums and figs. Probably some blackberries, some horsetail, stuff like that. So we'll be teaching on making our own nutrients, worm bins. I've got a couple different styles of compost going already. So we'll be able to talk about all that. Plenty of room to take some IMO samples, build up some of that. So we'll have, may even have started on the greenhouse by then. We'll kind of see how progress goes. It's been a little slow going at first, but picking up lately. So hopefully we can get some momentum and be that far along. But if nothing else, we'll be, I'm sure we'll be walking that section and talking about the greenhouse setup and all that kind of stuff as well. So I know Steve has a bunch of extra slides and stuff that he gets to add in that he can't fit into our two-day class. So I definitely, definitely think that it's going to be way more information. Probably we'll get to fit in a lot of the stuff, like I said, in the two-day class. We don't get to fit in as much stuff about like the nutrients or worm bins or things like that. It's mostly just aquaponics stuff. So we can extend out some of that and offer some information on the more commercial stuff. And Steve has much more pictures and stuff now, which I assume is going to get added into the slides if he normally does that. But I know he's got a bunch of pictures and videos and stuff from their current setup. So Steve, you want to talk about what you got cooking?
Oh, yeah. We'll have all kinds of pictures of new sets of pictures of insects and microbes and all kinds of, build pictures from the new setup I've been doing out here, as well as Marty's setup out there. So kind of see two different ways of setting up a larger scale system. And, we'll go over all different types of stuff in that four-day class. I know we might not even be able to get through everything in 4 days. We'll see, but we'll have a nice booklet to go with it. And, they'll be getting close, so I'll be finishing my book here, hopefully right around the end of the year as well, sometime between October and December. So if I finish it in time, we'll even have that available as part of the class as well. I'll give you one of those for coming to the class. If not, we'll get your info and we'll send you one. That'll go along with that as well. So be a really good time, and we cover a whole wide range of stuff. Marty and I have been teaching this class for quite a long time. I've been teaching this class since 2013. Him and I have been teaching this class together now for 2 or 3 years, and we really have a wide range. And we've been doing the podcast now for 3 or 4 years. So we have a wide range of and depth of information to go through with you on the class, and get a chance to spend time with both of us at Marty's own farm. So it'll be really, really awesome. I know I'm looking forward to it. And that'll be in October 17th through 20th.
And so I'm just outside of Medford, Oregon. So I'm in Southern Oregon. I actually live in Gold Hill, Oregon, technically, but Medford even has an international airport. You want to fly in, we're right on the I-5 corridor, so pretty easy access, even if you're driving in. So plenty of places to stay, within 20 minutes or so, you got lots of options. So pretty easy access as well. So if you want some more information, just hit us up.
Well, I think that's pretty awesome. I'll tell you what, and that's going to be at your farm, the 4 day. Is that your farm, your new place?
Yep, that's going to be here, where we should have at least the nursery completely online. Probably the flower room will be almost all the way online, and then, you know, I already have the compost, you know, all kinds of other stuff going as well. So we definitely have, you know, plenty of stuff, even if we don't get, you know, like I said, I hope to get to the greenhouse, but if we don't, you know, obviously that'll be a little bit later or a little more theoretical this year. But I think that's one of my favorite things about the class is every time, you know, we add a little bit more and add a little bit more. You know, it's always developing. So, but yeah, it is going to be, you know, here on site. We'll be able to, you know, go through plants, get some hands-on experience, you know, identify some bugs, do some IMO collecting, probably make some labs. You know, we have a 4-day class, so we can probably have some labs at different stages available that we can look at, stuff like that. And I know we do also have, I think, dates in August, right, Steve, the 17th and 18th?
Yep. Yeah.
Online version of the class as well.
Yep. So Marty and I have an online version of the class, and it's a 2-day aquaponic cannabis class. We'll be teaching that, and then at the end of the day, I'll be bringing you down into the nursery and the grow and the outdoor and everything that I have, and doing live coverage from my grow, commercial aquaponics farm. We have both soil and aquaponics, and then Marty will also be doing, you know, footage from his spot as well. So if you're looking for an online experience, maybe you're not in the United States, maybe you don't want to fly, maybe you can't afford to fly out to Oregon in October, you know, this is going to be your next chance to get a chance to have a whole weekend with Marty and myself. Again, this is the 2-day version of the class. We do quite a bit, but it's not quite the same depth as we do with the 4-day. There's a lot of hands-on stuff that we teach. We do a lot of hands-on KNF stuff as far as teaching you the methodology with the KNF in person with our hands. Microscope stuff, insect work, you know, a whole bunch of stuff that just is a little bit harder to do with the online. Although we do, you know, we will be using my microscope as well as Marty's microscopes as well for the online class. You know, we do a abbreviated version, but it is a 2-day version instead of the 4.
You know, just trying to shove all that information into 2 days. You know, I always like to talk about it as aquaponics 101 and cannabis 101. So if you don't know anything about either one, you know, definitely bring a pen because it's going to be a lot of information. Shoving it all into two days, even though, you know, we have a break for lunch, but we're basically going all day, both days. So to get all that information in there. And it's great to be able to do it online. You know, we've got lots of cameras set up. I'll even have more cameras set up this time. I have the digital microscope, which I have set up before, but we'll be, you know, looking at beneficial insects, releasing those, identifying any bad ones if we have them. I mean, hopefully, fingers crossed, we don't. But sometimes it's kind of nice to have the spider mite crawling around just so people can see what they look like.
It's an awesome, awesome class. I got to take it 1 weekend. You know, I've been invited to those, and it's really great. You get to ask questions. You know, there's so much information, but somehow it seems to flow. So it's lively. You're not falling asleep at all because it's going from topic to topic, and it's all riveting. And you know, if you're into this, I mean, you know, it's hard to believe it's riveting. We're getting to be old men, and we're talking about it's riveting to watch an aquaponics agriculture class, but it is. It's really great. Steve and Marty do a great job. Steve's got a great slide deck, and the things that he shows you are things that, what you know, basically once you see them, it'll give you, like, what you're looking for. And then you can keep coming back to it. And I believe, like I think you said, there is a book that you get, you know, like a workbook, right?
Well, yeah, so I have a book that I've been working on for a couple of years, and I'm right now about 80% done, just finishing up a couple of sections, finishing out some nutrient sections. Currently finishing out the organic tea section. So, you know, say I don't want to dose with potassium sulfate or potassium silicate, what can I use from an organic, you know, perspective, from a ferment perspective in my aquaponic system that will give me those benefits so that you can kind of weigh,
you know, if I'm doing commercial or home or whatever it is, you can kind of weigh the benefits of that given time, and you can make a decision. What the goal of the book is to give you the toolbox. I want you guys to have the toolbox so that you can make the decisions based on your grow methodology and what you feel is right for you at the time. And that's really what we try to do with the class as well. You know, some people want to do organic certified. Some people want to be DEM Pure certified. Some people just want to grow weed quickly and have it all work quickly with as little hassle as possible. And you know, all of those are perfectly valid ways to grow. And they're just, hey, you know, not everyone wants to do the same kind of thing. And that's perfectly fine. So we kind of, you know, try to give you the toolbox that you need. And allow you to decide what's going to be best. You know, I'm not here to preach to you and tell you what's the best. You know, that's for you to decide what's going to work best for you at a given time, and make sure that you have both organic and non-organic options depending on, you know, the cost effectiveness and the response time it's going to take before those plants respond.
Whoa, what did I just hear? Whoa, that's the first time I've ever heard you say that on the show. That almost knocked me out.
But thank you. You're even broadening it further, and I agree that's what we should do, Steve. But sorry to interrupt you, but
Yeah. And then I'm hoping to come out with a vegetable book after that, where we'll go through and cover a whole bunch of vegetables. We're going to have a small little vegetable area here at the new facility outside of the security perimeter, but on the same property, and we're going to grow vegetables, so we're going to, you know, do a lot of documentation with some of the weirder stuff that I've grown, and I want to do that for the book and do a vegetable book as well and do all the different grow methodologies, why different grow methods are, you know, why a soil is better than, you know, maybe a wicking bed's better than a dual root zone versus a DWC, depending on what it is you're trying to grow. So that'll be coming next year.
Nice.
I'm really excited. I always enjoy teaching classes with Marty. We always get a really good class, and Marty's always, you know, put in a lot of cool stuff. Marty's got some great pictures and put in a lot of really good work and, you know, helping spread the community as well. I know Marty and I first met, I think, was disagreeing on dual root zones. It was the first conversation we ever had, and after that, we realized both of us knew what the hell we were talking about, and there wasn't that many other people that did, and we decided, hey, man, why don't we do a podcast and come together and teach everybody to kind of the two different ends of the spectrum on aquaponic cannabis growing and learn from each other. And taught me a shit ton, and I couldn't be more grateful for that. And, yeah, I really appreciate having him on and all the stuff that he's, you know, helped us grow. I know he's provided us a ton of great guests as well, and I really appreciate him.
Yeah, it's honestly just great to be involved. It's so much fun. Like we were talking about the classes, you know, there have been a couple of times where people that have taken the classes have stopped by them. Because a lot of people road trip on I-5, and I can see I-5 almost over there. It's how close we are to it. So, you know, a lot of people road trip by, and so a couple of different people that have taken the class have stopped by later on. And it's definitely cool to get to meet up with all of those different types of people. Some of them go on to do different things. One of them that stopped by started an aquaponics farm, you know, back where they're from, based on information that we taught them. So I'm excited to see, you know, him do well. I think he's going to. So it's just really fun to get the different collection of people. I know that a lot of people Steve are working with now took the class, if I'm correct, right, Steve?
Yep. Yeah, the people I'm working with in Oklahoma are former students of our class. So,
so I think that it's just interesting how so many different people end up connecting in, having different perspectives. There always seems to be questions that we don't know the answer to, which is great, because then you get something to research and learn for yourself, and I think that's always fun. As a teacher, you don't feel like you're just droning through all the stuff that you already know, and so I think what I love about the class, first, even I have my camera's tweaking out, I don't know what I'm feeling, but what I like about teaching class with Steve is we always seem to bounce it back and forth pretty well, so that it's not a doesn't feel quite as lecturing, I guess, as a lot of other classes do. But maybe I'm just biased because we're the teachers this time. I don't know.
Well, again, you let people participate if they want to ask a question. And that's a different thing. Like I said, when I was talking with Dr. Faust, or I think it was Dr. Faust one night, I said, if I was able to interrupt, y'all love me for this, I know. But if I was able to actually ask a question in class in college, I would have learned a lot more. You know, if I could have talked to my doctors, you know, my lecturers, you know, instead of them just droning on for 2 hours and you want to fall asleep, you know, and you can barely hang. I mean, because that's just the way school was when we were that age, you know, unless you were real. But still, just think about it, how much more you could have learned if you could have had a Q&A the way today is. It's almost, I almost think, I would almost bet that if you went to college just today as opposed to my generation, the students get to interact much, much more than they ever did before. And a lot of that's because the interaction's computer or media generated, you know. So I just love being, you know, seeing this when y'all come up with this format, and your format's really good. It's like the kind of class that, again, I don't know why I'm getting like, oh, I love you guys. but it is a great class. And I, you know, I just thought about that, though, because the interaction that we all get to have is what makes everybody learn. And it teaches people of all different levels. I mean, there's a lot of times we want to get deep into something really deep for the advanced, you know, people that can, like I thought tonight was great, you know, with Roger, because he, you know, where he doesn't think he knows, he's not the end-all be-all, but he's got a lot of really solid ideals and what is it, standard operating procedures, right? You know, and then the idea of going about having products to spread out like a co-op. Something that I've been trying to work on for years, and I do it a little bit, but it never got to be, you know, of course I wasn't involved in a group like this, you know, that helps a lot too. When you're involved in a group and you get to talk with a bunch of experts that like across the, you know, and I can't even believe Steve just said he's actually going to write anything that has to do with non-organic or non-aquaponics. That's why I went, whoa, what? Wait, what? Did I can't believe I just heard that.
Everything is certified organic. Certified organic is, quite frankly, a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah, but you said hydroponic too, right? You said even salts or non-salt. I mean, you even kind of talked like almost like you were going to talk about conventional style a little bit.
No, but people need to be able. So, like,
oh, you want to give them the opportunity to look at it?
Little nowhere that have access to a grow store. They're trying to figure out what on the shelf they can. I can't tell you how many emails I get of some poor guy who's in the middle of nowhere who has access to one, maybe two grow stores,
yep,
that have even a tenth of a selection of anything, and they're trying to figure out if anything can even work in their aquaponic system at all. Like I can't tell you how many emails. I'm sure Marty's gotten at least half as many, if not as many, as I've gotten on that same question.
It's like 90% of the time, DWC. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, I saw it on YouTube. DWC works awesome. I bought my advanced nutrients, and now my plants are dying. What do I do?
Yep.
Okay. Start over.
Oh, we have the Slim Advanced Nutrients. I'll tell you what, the one thing I'd say too, for you people out there, Advanced Nutrients, there's some stuff, and if you know what you're doing and you do it right, you can probably grow pretty good with it. But yeah, there's so much stuff. You get caught up into that schedule where you buy 14 things and add them that way. You don't need to do that. And Advanced Nutrients, most of their products are copies of other companies' successful nutrient lines, whether it be Canna, MPK, 1314, or any of the other, General Hydroponics 3-part is, when people say, well, I use AN 3-part. Well, that's just a copy of General Hydroponics 3-part. It's the same thing, you know, which NASA used for a long time. And it goes on, and there's just all kinds. But every time somebody comes up with something, maybe then he would make a product. Of course, that's just business. So you can't fault Mike, Big Mike, for business, but, yeah, we've never, We've never, none of us use advanced nutrients, just to say that. Even if we do hydroponics, I make my own solutions. I don't buy anybody's solution. I buy bags of minerals and chelates, and I make my own solution. And it's kind of fun. That was fun tonight, too, on the show with Roger, that I found out that there's actually things that I've got that could be used in aquaponics, and even, I think, even Steve approves.
We lose Roger, or is that my connection?
Maybe last night you
lost Roger. Oh, Roger died. Well, his
back. We finally got back.
But it has been nice to do a old school episode with you back. I'm happy that you have a new spot. I recognize that desk. I used to have one once or three times.
I couldn't hear that last part. What was that?
So I recognize that desk. I used to have one once or three times before.
Oh, the desk?
Get it at Staples?
Probably. I think I ordered on Amazon, but it's definitely Staples style. It's like, it's a glass desk.
Staples chic.
Staples chic. I got it on Amazon, though, which is probably worse, but...
Looks like we lost Roger. On that note, I think we'll wrap up the show. We had thanks to Roger from True Aquaponics, trueaquaponics.com, if you're looking for more information on him. He also runs the True Aquaponics Facebook group. It is a great non-toxic Facebook group on the internet around aquaponic growing. A lot of aquaponic groups are pretty toxic. This one is not. And then Marty, why don't you tell everybody how to find you?
So you can find me. I'm always hanging out in the Aquaponic Cannabis Growers group on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram at APMeds, like Aquaponic Meds. You can find me on Patreon at APMeds, on YouTube. Also, my channel is called APMeds. And I don't have a lot of content currently because I didn't really feel like videotaping myself moving. So... and I haven't been able to grow anything because we knew we were going to be moving. So it's just been, just had everything down to bare bones. But I can have a lot of content here coming up in the next probably 2 weeks to get everything set back up and rolling again. We'll have the nursery, like I said, coming online and getting that set up with all the moms, cloning process. So definitely be checking those out over the next couple of weeks. And then, you know, check out the Facebook group. We've got all kinds of links in there, lots of different people's channels. Again, that's Aquaponic Cannabis Growers Facebook group. You can go check that out. The links are almost always in the description of these videos. So check those out. Join the group. Hit me up on Instagram, any of those spots if you have any questions. Let us know. Check out the class coming up. The online class is on the 17th and 18th or something like that. See if you remember.
17th through 20th.
And then also the on-site class.
Okay. Online class is 17th and 18th, and then the in-person class is 17th through 20th. Oh.
That's August 17th and 18th, and then October for the on-site class.
Yep. So
definitely check those out. Also, the link for that should be in the description. And if you guys have any questions, again.
Yeah, the website for the commercial class is commercialapmjclass.com. And then the other class is online apmjclass.com for the 2 day. So, all right. And then Fish Ganja Guy is Fish Ganja Guy on Instagram and YouTube. And who else is on the show? Mr. Green Jeans, greenjeansgarden.com. And is that everybody?
I love growingmarijuana.com.
Growingmarijuana.com for Roger.
And, oh, your seed meat.
Yeah, or Roger Lakewood on Instagram or Facebook. And you can find me at Potent Ponics. or on YouTube, SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, all the different places. And we'll catch you guys again on Tuesday. Tuesday we have Vagabond Seeds. If you guys know him, he recently had a fire less than a mile from his house. He's going to be talking to us about what it's like to live in fire country and seed breeding, being a seed seller, and how to support your local seed breeders from a point of sale point of view. So he's a really great guy, knows a lot about growing, and he'll be with us on Tuesday. So shout out to Solly, and he'll be talking to us about his new website and everything ready to go. So we'll talk to you then, and take care. Cheers.